So the other day, I had to take some clothes to the dry cleaners.
Uh-huh.
And very nice man who runs the dry cleaners. And we've talked a few times. And I needed some pants hemmed, right?
Sure.
Because I bought new ones and they were functioning as slippers. So I needed them hiked up.
Was the waist good and we just needed to bring the
simple, okay. Simple fix. Okay. Yeah.
It's just the cuffs. You just bought real long pants.
Yeah, I just need them hiked, right? Sure. And you guys know I like to keep them high.
High water guy.
Yeah. That's right. I always have been. I like to show sock. So I'm in there and I come out and he like does the thing with the scissors. He pins them.
No,
like
a pin.
Pins. He takes pins.
Clothespin. Yeah. And I'm like, I think I want him a little bit higher. He's like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, I like him, you know, a little high. He's like, okay. All right. So he does it and I come out and I put him on the counter. He's like, you're sure about this, right? And I was like, yeah. You know, I like him high. It's what the kids do. And he was like, yeah, okay. He's like, I guess you're young. And I'm like, well, I'm not that young. He goes, you're not? And I was like, how old do you think I am? He's like, you really want me to guess? I was like, yeah. How old do you think I am? He said 23.
What?
He said 23. I was floored.
That's unbelievable.
Adam, I'm going to tell you something.
I would like your guys' feedback on this because I think this man has, like he's got a really strange conception of age because I maybe have a young face, but I don't look 23. You know what I mean?
No you don't.
You don't.
I could
look
play
younger.
I could play 29.
You could definitely play late 20s.
Not 23, though.
No, you're not 23. Just, you didn't graduate from college a year or two ago.
Recently.
No. Yeah.
If it were during the time that they were casting the movie Grease, you could have been one of the T-Birds, though.
That's an excellent point. Those guys were all in their mid-40s.
Those are all 38.
And they're playing Sonny, 16 Sonny and is, 17 years old.
Sonny is 52 years old.
Well, this is a great transition because while you are not 23, you were close to the age of 23 around the time that this next song from Nobody Knows the Shadowboxers But You was written. Welcome!
Wow.
Nobody knows the Shadowboxers but you.
So it's us. It's the Shadowboxers. And
sorry, I didn't mean to cut you short. That's big.
No.
That's really nice.
No, it was great. It made my week. It was fantastic. But it was also
why wouldn't it make your week?
But it was also concerning. Like that's too young.
I have two things to say. Number one is you are a shave and a haircut away from looking 10 years younger at any point, and you know this. Okay? That's why you have facial hair most of the time, because you don't want to look like you're in high school.
That's fair. That's
okay.
Fair.
Okay. The second thing is, and I want to swing it to Matt for this. Matt recently has been doing something with his hair. Adam knows. If he has, I don't think you've been posting that much lately, Matt, but
for
the listeners out there, he's doing something that we like to call a mullet. Okay? And what I want to know...
Colloquially known as a mullet.
Yeah, right. And what I want to do is talk about what, Matt, you say to your barber, and Adam, you say to your tailor, because both of you are doing something that a traditional... Is outside of the traditional approach, where the barber would say, are you sure you want the sides cut and not the back? And the tailor says, are you sure you want the legs higher? Something outside of the traditional cut. Talk about it.
So about 6-7 months ago, I go into the barber and I'm like, I want to grow it out. And he's like, okay, like, what are we talking here? And I was like, the goal is like Patrick Swayze, like Kurt yes. Russell 80s. I want flow.
Tango and Cash, Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
thank you.
Just naked jail showers.
Yes.
I want to look like I'm taking a naked jail shower.
Yeah.
And I have Kurt Russell's hair.
Next to Stallone in glasses in that movie.
Right.
Yes. So I tell him this. And he's like, are you sure? Because there's going to be a really awkward grow period. I was like, what's it going to be like? He's like, you're going to have a mullet for many months. Because we got to grow the back out, and I'll keep your sides short, but that means that, you know, you're going to have a mullet. Mm-hmm. So I do have a mullet right now, but it is not the goal. It's part of the journey. But I got my hair cleaned up 2 days ago, and this really locked it in for me, because he was like, all right, are we still doing this? Because I've now come for like 5 cleanups. And he was like, so look, you know, we're going to keep growing this out, right? And I was like, yeah, I looked at myself in the mirror the other day and I looked like a clown, but I got to commit, right? And
that's right.
He was like, yeah, I think you can do this. And then we went along with the haircut, and like 5 minutes later, he was like, hey, I just want you to know I'm impressed, because most people at this point would have just bailed. I was like, really?
So true.
He was like, yeah. Really? He was like, 9 out of 10 people will bail at this point.
Anybody that has a mullet, people should see people with mullets with a respect, because you have to fight through about 5 or 6 different awkward phases in order to get there.
Yeah, we're in.
So let's talk about the goal. The goal is not quite a mullet, right? It's more of like it's like a quaff.
I think
it's
the kids
wave.
Are calling it a wolf cut.
I don't know what that means.
Go look it up. Like, I think it's basically.
Just ask
everyone,
your peers.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody from the Lord of the Rings trilogy had a wolf cut.
Ah, okay.
Viggo Mortensen in Lord of the Rings. Except his hair is stringy. It's not gonna look like that.
Except that's not your hair, and you know it.
Yeah, we're growing
it out.
That's
a hot reference, though. That's a hot reference.
Hot reference. Viggo Mortensen's Secret 2002.
Okay, so I just asked one question. I'd like to continue asking questions, and I'd like to ask a question about this song. Okay. And the reason that I want to ask, well, Adam, first of all, why don't you intro it?
Yeah.
It's Matt's pick. Matt.
No, it's my pick. Oh, it's Matt's pick.
It's funny because.
And if you want to ask your question, ask your question. But I do have some thoughts.
We should say the name of the song. This episode is about a song called "Shot in the Dark." Okay.
Welcome. Also, everybody, welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome. Yeah. I'm Matt.
I'm
Matt Scott and Adam. The three of us are in a band called the Shadow Boxers, and we're here now.
Scott, question me.
This is the song that I have contributed to the least.
Yeah.
And therefore, I feel the most equipped to almost play interviewer on this.
Oh, I like that.
I like that.
It's a good format.
So the first question I have is for Matt. Why did you pick this song?
Great. Great question. Scott, I'm so glad you asked this question. I picked this song, and please correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think there's any other song that the three of us have written other than Highway Roses, where a song was built out by the other members and then another member sang it.
Mm.
Oh.
That's probably right.
So Shot in the Dark is a song that I picked. Most of the songs, just for reference here, that I feel like this project has sort of leaned towards and allowed us to focus on as three individual writers who are part of a greater unit, is the songs that have sort of fallen to the wayside that we really wish had been able to, you know, sort of make it through and for some reason didn't. And up until this point, all of these songs have been songs that we ourselves, meaning the person who picked the song, wrote. And so to start out round three, I wanted to do something a little different, which is pick a song by one of my peers that I really wish had come out. That is, I think, my favorite song of Adam's. And so that was why this song was my pick. I have other songs of mine that I hope see the light of day, but I love this song so much that I wanted to prioritize it getting out into the world.
That's
and
awesome.
After talking to, you know, obviously the three of us have talked about which tracks we're putting out, I was very appreciative that Adam was cool with me basically yoinking one of his songs. Mm-hmm. And it actually wasn't until later that I asked if you'd be all right if I sang the vocal on it.
I was just going to say, the other part of this premise of doing this has been, for our entire history, every decision was made by democracy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we each got a vote on pretty much everything, mm-hmm. which was good in some aspects and made other aspects hard.
Yeah.
And the part of doing this project has been each one of us sort of picks a song and the other two can't really say anything about it.
Right.
You know? And it's sort of liberated us in a cool way. And so, you know, when you picked this song, I was thrilled and flattered. But also I was like, whatever you want to do, you know, this is your right. pick. It's not really mine anymore at that point. And I think that helped to like separate me from, you know, demoitis on this song and just be like, whatever. Yeah, let's try it.
Wow. So you feel like once I made that call, that helped you in the sort of reapproaching the project, like the reapproaching of the,
yeah,
of 100%. The session? Oh, wow.
100%. Yeah. And even like you singing it. Like,
yeah,
sure.
It becomes a different song when he sings it. And now you can reapproach it.
Yeah. It's not mine anymore. It's your pick.
So, Matt, what about the song made you want to yoink it? Don't think I was just going to let that word slide.
Yeah, I said yoink. The thing about this song that made me want to put it out is, and the reason that this is my favorite Adam song is because it is, in my mind, both so uniquely Adam from a lyrical perspective. The lyrics are, these are Adam Hoffman lyrics. We've got nature imagery, okay? There are philosophical and spiritual undertones, okay?
Yeah.
But then from a melodic perspective, this is my favorite melody. The chorus melody is my favorite melody that I think you've ever written. I'm not going to say actually my favorite melody you've ever written, but it's up there. It's like one of my favorite melodies. And then
I'll take it.
We'll take it. And then just from like a vibe perspective, the sonic like approach that you took just on the first earliest demo even felt to me like just such an honest representation of both your influences and the type of music that you make and that you want to put out in the world. It felt like I could hear the R&B and, oh God, I was trying to think of his name. He's got that song Stoned Part One.
Oh yeah.
I'll find
it. That's funny because, you know, in thinking about this podcast, I was trying to think through like, what were the influences of this song? And usually it's very clear to me as a writer, like, oh, I was listening to this and this one feels like I'm kind of lost as to what influenced it, but I was listening to that guy a lot.
Lewis Taylor.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, I think what you just said, like that is another reason that I love this song. I could never pinpoint which artists this song really sonically drew from the most. And I was like, amazing. This is a freaking Adam Hoffman song. I think the other thing about Adam's writing that makes this song work for me is that little touch of nihilism in Even God Will Get Another Name, in the ends of the chorus being like, hey, and also then none of this matters. It's all gonna change. Yeah. That's what makes a lot of the imagery that you used really, really work for me too.
Adam, what's this song about?
Yeah. So the chorus is one of those things that you sort of, I don't know, I can count on probably one hand the times this has happened to me where just the whole thing just kind of came out in probably a matter of 3 or 4 minutes. And we were on tour somewhere and we were staying at probably a Hampton Inn. And we were somewhere in like the mountains of Virginia. I think we were on the way to somewhere.
God bless that breakfast buffet.
You don't play there. And I woke up early and went outside and sat on like the curb of the parking lot of the Hampton Inn. And it was like a perfect fall morning. And I was just like, that first line was just very, when I wrote the first line, I had like a little notebook and I wrote it and I was like, that is super lame. Like that's been my whole thing with this song from the beginning is like, I think it's really cheesy. And I don't.
Sorry, are you referring to all the little sun-kissed leaves of the chorus?
All the little sun-kissed leaves. Like that is not, I don't know. It feels pretty corny to me.
Right.
But what I meant was I can count on one hand the times this has happened is not the speed at which the rest of it came out, but that after I wrote it, I went back and thought about it. And there's all this connective tissue in this chorus that to this day moves me in a way that's very much out of body, like I had nothing to do with it because I discovered it afterwards. It was not intentional in the writing. And it's every line sort of calls back to a previous line in the chorus. So it's all the little sun-kissed leaves, all the bitter broken dreams. They're all shooting for the same damn thing. So both your dreams and your leaves are sort of shooting to live on forever. Just a shot for the stars, which is sort of the dream, or an evergreen, which refers to the leaf wanting to be an evergreen. Everything will fall the same. Fall, you have your imagery of a leaf falling, but also the dreams sort of missing. Another hero with a broken wing. And then even God will get another name. I think that is what this song is about, which harkens to the pre-chorus, which is what you cannot name doesn't need a name, so you try to say what you mean to say. And I think I was reading a lot of like Cormac McCarthy at the time, and he's got this trilogy called the Border Trilogy. And there are whole, like, I mean, all of this is probably just ripped from that, not consciously, but I was reading it at the time, and there are whole like 100-page sections sort of ruminating on that idea that the moment we name something, we corrupt it. And because nothing can be named, because by naming it, we are diminishing it in some way. And the chorus is sort of all about this idea that, you know, we got to just aim for what we're going to aim for and absolutely go for it. And we will fail. You know, the leaf is going to fall. It's not an evergreen. You're not going to hit the stars. Even the hero has a broken wing. Like, all of this is just about shooting your shot. Hence the title. But I wasn't aware of sort of all the ties with the, you know, even like the word fall having to do with the leaves and all of that until after it was written. But I think part of my difficulty with this song has been the cheesiness factor. Because of the first line of the chorus, especially, there's a pause in the music and there's this big moment and you sing all the little sun-kissed leaves. Like, it just feels kind of wimpy. And you're landing on a chorus that is like super major. And it's a really basic chord progression. And my sort of, I remember when I brought this to you guys the first time, I was very nervous because I was like, I think this is super cheesy. The melody's very like sing-songy. The chords are very simple. And there's some like, I don't know, a little wimpiness to it. But so I think what was pulled off was how masked that is by the production.
That's exactly.
You can't.
Everything you just said is it. That's why this song has been such a perfect marriage for me. Of like, you as somebody who gravitates towards those types of lyrics and those types of themes, and sometimes it doesn't work. As we all gravitate towards things, and they don't work all the time. But I think because of the space that you put this in, this is a song that's really a sum of all of its parts. And for me, like, the sun-kissed leaves has never bothered me once. You've written lines in songs that I've been like, what the that doesn't work.
Yeah.
But the sun-kissed leaves being on such a major chord has never bothered me once. And I think it's just a testament to how we interpret or prepare ourselves for our bandmates' interpretations of our own work, or just like how sometimes like it's just like these songs are some of many, many parts. And I don't know at what point a song sort of eclipses those little moments that just sort of like taken separately can leave you sort of head scratching and nervous. But that's my favorite thing about this song.
Yeah. Let me speak quickly to that. The song reminds me a lot of Lead Role because of the same thing, the cheesiness factor, which we were able to, I don't know, overcome. From a songwriting perspective, we talked about this on that pod, so I don't want to get too much into it. You can go back and listen to that pod where we get into it more. But basically, the fact that it lands on a major chord kind of has this, ta-da, we're here, tied with a bow, saccharine 100%. Feeling. And that's a tricky thing to do in a musical genre, the one that we're in, or one of the ones that we're in, where it's important to be cool always. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people, if you go on like our liked artists or similar artists on Spotify, there's a lot of minor chords going on. And there's a lot of like cool points in not being that happy. By the way, the song isn't happy, but that landing, I can understand how if you're writing this song as you on an acoustic guitar, how that can feel like, you know, a kumbaya song. And there's some things that we did that I want to use as a segue to make it not feel cheesy. One, the singer. Having Matt sing it as opposed to you. Just the
character. we should play both back to back because they're so different. You are your name.
Different characteristics to our voices, and in order to combat the sweeter nature of the lyrics and instrumental chord structure, Matt's voice has a natural kind of heftiness to it that I think makes it less sweet. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps. And secondly, the production, which was changed, I think the synths in there and the way that it comes across is so much less ethereal and kind of like dreamy, sweet, yeah. Dreamy. And it feels a lot more grounded in earth. And those juxtapositions, I think, are really cool. And so Matt and Adam, I want to ask you guys both about the production, about the revamp of this song. And what do you think? If you can diagnose the things that I just mentioned, how does it stay grounded? What were the things that you were able to do in production to combat the sweetness of the lyric?
Well, maybe I'll start. So the first demo, I think another reason that this, especially with the chord progression on the chorus, doesn't feel like that chord progression on the chorus is because I've never played this on an acoustic guitar. I didn't write it on an acoustic guitar. I wrote it in production. I think even when I was recording it, the chords were never even played on the chorus. They were just implied by the bass and the melodic lines of the guitars. There was maybe like a pad or something underneath, but it was never overt. And the first demo I did of this, you're right, was very swimmy, very ethereal, very sort of, it was almost like, Everything was reverbed.
It's your calling home. The leaf is turning. The past is burning. And you're returning. Where they all are from.
Yeah, it was very reflective of the lyric. So
yeah.
Maybe it was like it needed to be balanced out. The lyric had that element covered.
Yeah, and I remember the revamp to this song actually started in the early parts of the pandemic. Matt, I think you had always been such a champion of this song, and you know, we had considered trying it for the Slow March of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, I had just sort of, you know, spent a couple weeks going back in, you know, because I think I wrote this in 2015, probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
going back in 2020 and just, you know, with new years and new skills, to revamp it. And a lot of the revamp was swapping out these washy drums, sort of like very deep. The preset on the drum kit was called Warm Bag of Nuts, which should give you an impression. And I swapped it out for much punchier sort of hip hop kind of samples. And then sort of completely redoing the whole synth soundscape to be punchier and, you know, more of sort of classic vintage synth sounds rather than more of the like washy kind of 80s stuff that was in there before. Particularly, the verse was kind of stayed the same except for the drums, but the chorus didn't really have much punch to it. It just kind of flowed through everything. And I think bringing the synths in to really like land the ones of all of those changes was really helpful. And then the other thing is that the chord change at the end of the chorus, just a shot in the dark, you better shoot away, just a shot in the dark. That happened by accident. I was in that sort of major mode and there was a synth preset where you could like swap between it, like adding a seventh or something like that. And I changed the chord and hit that button and it flipped to that chord. And I was like, ooh, that's fascinating. Cause you know, that's something that I would have had to think through. And I don't think I would have ever gotten there, which was another, you know, benefit of not writing this on the acoustic guitar, you know?
Yeah, right. It's another instrument. To be a producer.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And you get happy accidents like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my perspective. And then, you know, when Matt said he wanted to pick it, I brought it back up from 2020 and just sort of, again, 3 years later, modernized it again. But
I remember you sent this to me early on in the pandemic, just like, hey, I was just messing around and I chose this song to mess around on. And it just made me so happy to hear just like a revamped version. And then this was even before we started this project, the Nobody Knows project. And I was really excited to dive back in. I think from my perspective, the only thing I can really add to what Adam said is that I was suffering tremendously from demoitis. I was very attached to all of Adam's melodic choices and I felt like I was adapting. So I was trying to find the parts of the song that Adam had done and the melodic choices he'd done, even down to like the ad-libs that I really wanted to emulate, and then other parts of the song that I thought could benefit from change. So there are just like throughout the chorus, I remember just trying to fluctuate I just tried to make one or two melodic choices in each chorus, in the second and third chorus, that would just help a little because it is a longer chorus. So I feel like when you've got that three times throughout a song, it's almost like these little subconscious things that help a chorus feel more dynamic for the listener. So I was definitely trying to do that.
Like even God'll get up versus even God'll get in, just subtle ones. Yeah.
Bingo. That was exactly one, but I didn't want to change, alter the melody too much rather. And then just lastly, the biggest sort of swing I took was just that outro, because you know, it's just the end of the song is just sort of a double chorus of this already pretty long chorus. So I was trying to think of ways to build dynamically, and I was just like, maybe it's another whole melody that's sort of underneath the chorus. And that was honestly my first take. That was like the first melody that came into my head, which feels cool to say, but it is true. And feels appropriate for how in a lot of ways many parts of this song sort of popped out of Adam, which is always the greatest gift for us as songwriters.
I also just want to say, you know, you, especially with a song that's 7 years old, there's that you don't hate, there's very real demoitis that sets in. Like it cements. And I was thrilled to hear your voice on this, but also really nervous because like I loved it as is, and what if I don't love it, you know? And but it's your pick, whatever. And when I got the first take that you had done back, I literally was like stood up and was dancing around my studio because it was so fucking good. And it was so much better than what I had done. And then, you know, we went back and forth a little bit and we were tweaking it. And I was like, go crazy. Like, fill this thing up. And the melody in the back half of the second chorus is so good and catchy. Sometimes after I listen to this song, that's what's stuck in my head.
Oh, wow.
Now the sun kissed leaves. And it was tough because there's like four melodies happening at the same moment in that last chorus. There's the chorus, which is harmonized. There's a guitar melody. There's a different background that I had introduced that comes in the second chorus. That's the, can't you wait for me, my love? Can't you wait for me, my love? And then that. And I was like, this can't possibly all happen at the same time. All the bitter broken dreams, they're all shooting for the same damn thing. Just a shot for the stars or an evergreen. Everything will fall the same. Another hero with a broken wing. Even God will get another name. Just a shot in the dark, better shoot away. It's a shot in the dark, you better shoot away. It's a shot in the dark. All the little sun-kissed leaves, all the bitter broken dreams, they're all shooting for the same damn thing. Just a shot for the stars or an evergreen. Everything will fall.
I'll briefly say, you know, my experience with this song is you guys handled this, right? This was not something that I didn't even know what was going on with this song. And I don't say that like, if anything, it was an asset to this song because by the time it came to me, I felt like I was listening with fresh ears to something that you guys had been living with for a while.
Yeah.
So I was able to give a take on a song that was almost as if I was hearing it for the first time. And I mean, I obviously know the song, but the new version of the song was new to me entirely. And what struck me is what I told you guys is that, well, number one is that Matt's vocal on this is great. And number two is that the chorus is the hero of this song.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to add some stuff to it to make it pop a little bit. So I did my thing on harmony-wise on top of the choruses, which we drizzled in and adds a little bit more pop to it.
Yep.
And we also shortened the second pre-chorus to...
It's key.
To escalate accelerate right into the second chorus.
When I was mixing it, you know, you listen to the vocals just by themselves, just to mix. And even once I got yours back, Scott, and I was just listening to all of them, it was, I was blown away because it's, everyone has like these little moments and they're small and you maybe don't even, they're sort of textures a lot of times rather than parts. And it's cool.
Well, I usually ask this at the end.
You've been a great moderator, by the way.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
At the end, I usually ask this question.
Thanks for having us on your show.
Yeah, no, thanks guys for joining.
Yeah.
I ask this at the end, why didn't this song come out then and why did it come out now? I think we've actually sort of answered that question. Well, you wrote it in 2015. I remember when you brought it to us at the time. I'll take what I think the answer is, and then you guys can contribute to it. We've mentioned this before, but it was at that time when we were in just the JT world. And everything, I remember when we went to East West Studios in Los Angeles to record with him. This was our first time being in the studio with Justin Timberlake. We had been doing 3 years of writing and demoing and sending him songs. And this was before we went in to record Apollo. This was the first time, like our test run. We're all in the studio together, all the anticipation, all the buildup. And before we went in, let's say we started on a Monday morning. On Sunday night, we all went in and listened to this big SoundCloud of all of our demos. And the idea was to highlight some focus tracks that we were going to work on for the upcoming 2 weeks in the studio. And, you know, it's kind of like that moment of like, you listen to 3 seconds of one. Next. Right. Next. You know, you never really. And then
that was
we're
a month
over
of work,
here,
but that's fine.
Yeah, and we're over here going, no, but the bridge is incredible on this song. Yeah. No one cares about the bridge. Next.
Yeah.
It was like that. And I remember this song during that. I don't know if you guys do. Do you?
It's the wrong song for that setting.
I don't. What happened?
I don't either.
I blocked it out.
So you press play on this song. And like, it was
20 seconds later, after the delay has...
Next. I'm telling you, before, it was just like, too sleepy, next. Too sleepy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think I had definitely blocked that out, and it was going to come up in therapy in 40 years after I unearthed how traumatizing that was.
Trauma.
Yeah, it was basically like, boring, next.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And by the way...
But you haven't read the Cormac McCarthy trilogy that
it's
based on.
Yeah, oh my God. Yeah.
You just don't get it.
By the way, I'm not saying that Justin was the one to say that. That was like room consensus.
Yeah, but it was.
Maybe it was. I don't want to throw him under the bus. I don't know if he was the one that actually said it, but it was like agreed upon by him. And it was also maybe Dre and some of the other people in his camp that were just like, nah, you know,
cut next,
soft, next,
soft.
Yeah. So I think that's what I think that kind of put a bad taste in our mouths with that song.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, so it's not for this project. Let's maybe
definitely
table it.
Not.
So that was in like 2017.
Yo, shout out to Rob Knox. You would have rocked the production on this song. You missed out.
100%. Missed out.
I just wanted to cut this in too, just because I didn't want to interrupt the flow, the progressive flow. Adam, so elated to hear that was your reaction to me re-singing this vocal, because I also had major anxiety about, you know, once again.
Oh, come on, you guys. You're too polite with each other.
No, I did. I had major anxiety about, you know, once again, even though I know it's my pick and you... You know, I had demoitis, and I didn't know what your response was going to be.
It's not the polite thing.
Yeah, there, it's a respect.
We put such no. It would no. We've put.
It's
such,
not respect either.
It's not.
You're right.
I don't respect either of you.
Yeah.
Not even a.
So what is?
I don't
it,
have
Adam?
An iota of respect for either of you. It's the pressure that we put that on ourselves to impress the two people who. We probably have the highest regard for when it comes to music, right?
That's what it is.
Not including like Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney. The people
but then
I know.
After, right.
Yeah.
Like literally those four.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure of like, you know, the approval of the other two bandmates is a really scary. And the bar is not even as high as you think it is in your head, but it is a scary bar.
All right, guys. I just wanted to say before Matt closes us out that this is a really... It was quite a journey. We're sitting here 8 years later after this song was originally written. And now it's coming out into the world. And it's awesome. And it has all of our little things on it. I loved being a part of it at the end after you guys had done all the heavy lifting. So kudos to you. Kudos to you, Matt, for picking it, for bringing it back to life and giving it this new take. And I'm really happy with it. And I'm also really happy with the way that it sort of complements the playlist of Nobody Knows the Shadowboxers But You songs that is growing into something kind of organically very interesting and diverse.
Love it.
It's almost like the collection of songs is turning into an album.
Wait a minute.
Matt's making a face if anyone cares.
The face is still happening too.
Yeah,
it's evolving like
Adam,
the playlist.
Adam, do you have anything you want to add before I close this out?
Sugar Water. What's that name of that movie?
Man in Black.
Man in Black.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
No, I have nothing to add.
Everybody get psyched. Adam's next pick, it's a banger.
Ooh.
And
oh, man. Adam, let's use two words to describe it.
I'm going to use one word, and that's parasol.
Mm-hmm. Also our sponsor for today.
I'm talking vintage umbrellas. Vintage umbrellas, okay? Fancy, curved wood handle, could be a cane umbrellas.
Yep.
Should tell you everything you need to know.
It does. Well, guys, thank you for listening once again. Nobody knows the Shadow Boxers but you. Nobody knows you but the Shadow Boxers.
It still makes no sense.
We out.
No sense at all.